Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Joshua chapter 13. This chapter will discuss the land that is still to be conquered by the Israelites that Joshua hasn't conquered yet as he's getting old. And it will mainly cover the land in the Transjordan area, east of the Jordan, that has not been conquered yet. Our context is this. Our last chapter showed a list of all the kings that were defeated by Moses before he died on the east side of the Jordan, and also Joshua, his conquest on the west side of the Jordan. So we start now in Joshua 13, 1 through 2. Now Joshua was old and advanced in years when the Lord said to him, "You are old and advanced in years, and very much of the land remains to be possessed. This is the land that remains, all the regions of the Philistines and all those of the Geshurites." Well, how old was Joshua here? That cannot be said precisely. He lived to be 110. John Gill estimates he's about 100 years old here. Now, why did the Lord say this to Joshua? Well, he's trying to intimate to Joshua that you're too old to cut the mustard anymore. You're unable to go out and finish the job of conquering Canaan. That's a job for young military people, and you're old codger. It's time for you to go out to pasture, graze around a little bit, enjoy your old age. Others are going to have to conquer the land after you, Joshua. Now, you can't conquer the land before you die, but you can still divide the land. Now, Joshua spent about 7 years conquering the southern and northern parts of Canaan land, as we've described in previous chapters. And Adam Clark supposes that it would have taken about 1 year to divide it after he had conquered it. Now, it could be that Joshua had been waiting to conquer all the land before he started dividing it between the tribes. And God told him here, "Don't wait for that, Joshua. You're too old. You're not going to be able to conquer all the land before you die." Verse 2 says, "This is the land that remains." This is God talking to Joshua. "This is the land that remains." Now, many of these places that we're going to talk about never came into Israel's hands, and that's because of their disobedience. But this is what they were supposed to get, even though they didn't actually get it. All right, we begin with, at the bottom of the back end of verse 2, all the regions of the Philistines. That, of course, is the famous Shephelah, the southwestern coast of Israel, where Gaza, Ashdod, Ekron, and Gath were, those five famous cities of the Philistines. So you need to get that, Joshua, or eventually you're going to need to get it. And then the land of the Geshurites, those are people around the Sea of Galilee. Some people say to the northwest of the Sea of Galilee, going all the way up to Mount Hermon around there, or some people have it to the west of the Sea of Galilee, probably both. So basically, southwest and north, you need to get it still. Now we go to Joshua 13:3, "From the Shehor, which is east of Egypt, even as far as the border of Ekron to the north, it is counted as Canaanite. The five lords of the Philistines, the Gazite, the Ashdodite, the Ashkelonite, the Gittite, the Ekronite, and the Avite." All right, that word Shehor is probably mysterious to most of us. It means dark, but you might be familiar with its other name, the Wadi El Arish. That's the brook of Egypt that separates the land of Israel from Egypt on the southwestern corner, even south of Gaza, as you go down to where the Mediterranean Sea makes its westward bend there. The Wadi El Arish runs into the Mediterranean there and runs through the desert of Shur, that famous desert where Ishmael's mother Hagar almost died in. So that's Shehor, the Wadi El Arish, which is east of Egypt, is east of Egypt and southwest of Israel, even as far as the border of Ekron. If you look at the map, starting on the southwest coast, you got Gaza first, then you got Ashkelon next, going north about 15 miles and maybe about 10 miles or so. You got Ashdod. Then you go northeast a little bit into the interior of the plain of Philistia, the Shephelah. You get to Ekron, then you go south of Ekron a few miles, you get to Gath. Now the people who live in Gath are called Gittites, as they're called here in Joshua 13:3. There's another tribe mentioned, the Avite. They're sort of obscure. Here's what Easton says. "The Avim, a people dwelling in Hazarim, or the villages or encampments on the southwest corner of the seacoast," which of course is where we are now. "They were subdued and driven northward by the Kaphtorim." Those are the people probably came from Cyprus who were the Philistines. A trace of them is afterwards found in our verse here, Joshua 13:3, where they are called Avites. They're not one of the five lords of the Philistines. They were aboriginal before the Philistines, and they got run out. We go now to Joshua 13:4. "To the south, all the land of the Canaanite, and Mearah that belongs to the Sidonians as far as to Aphek, to the border of the Amorite. Now, if you read that verse starting in verse 4, to the south all the land of the Canaanite, it sounds like the Canaanites are in the south, but the problem with that is the Canaanites weren't in the south. They were in the north. They were up on around Carmel and going up the Lebanese coast. Some people have said, well, it just means they were south of where all the other Canaanites were, south compared to the Sidonians, the other Canaanites, the Phoenicians. I don't think so. Adam Clark says it's to the south of the Philistines on the seacoast. I think that's exactly what it means. And so the way we would read it is go back to verse 3 and read, and the Avite, verse 4, to the south, and the Avite to the south. The verse division is arbitrary. All the land of the Canaanite, as I said, that's the Phoenicians. That's up on the coast of the Mediterranean, north of Israel. And Mearah, Easton says that's a cave in the northern boundary of Palestine. So otherwise, nobody knows where it is. Belongs to the Sidonians. Remember, you go in northern Israel, you find Carmel, go up from Carmel, you get to Acre, go up about another 15 miles or so. I guess you get to Sidon and Tyre, I'm sorry, then go up further from that, 20, 25 miles, I forgot. 15, 20, 25 miles, you get to Sidon. These are famous places. Now, Aphek was assigned to Asher. They never got it. That was too far north. But it was the scene of the licentious worship of the Syrian Aphrodite. If you'll look at the map, once you get past Sidon, you go a little bit further, you get to the ancient Beirut, which sounds a lot like the modern Beirut, and you go a little bit farther past Beirut, and you get to Gebal, which is on the BibleAtlas.org map, and that's what the ancients called Byblos, famous city. And then if you go due east 12 miles, past the Lebanon mountain range, into the valley there, you get to Aphek, into the Coele Syria Valley, the valley between the Lebanon and anti-Lebanon ranges, you get to Aphek. So that's way up there into Lebanon. And as I said, the Israelites never got that far. And BibleAtlas.org, by the way, has a question mark by Aphek, so who knows. As far as Aphek to the border of the Amorite, and that phrase to the border of the Amorite has caused a problem. We're obviously referring to the restricted sense of Amorite, not all the ites that are in Canaan land, but this is the particular Amorite tribe. The problem is there's no Amorites up there in the, where the Phoenicians are. Now, Adam Clark says the Amorites should be read Aramites, which is Syrians, and there were a lot of Syrians up there. All you have to do is to transpose two Hebrew letters. The problem with that, in Clark's time, there was no manuscript evidence supporting his theory, so we won't go with that. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says that the Amorites that are referred to there is the northern border of Og of Bashan's territory. Here's what two commentators that agree with Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, the Cambridge commentary, on the extreme north border of the Amorites, or the land once inhabited by them, and which afterwards passed to Og, king of Bashan. And that makes sense to me. The pulpit commentary agrees. It says, this can hardly be anything but the northern border of the kingdom of Bashan in the neighborhood of Mount Hermon. However, Kyle and Dillich, the eminent commentators from Germany, disagree. They say this on the border of Ammon is obscure, of the Amorites, excuse me, is obscure. We cannot imagine the reference to be to the territory of Og of Bashan, which was formerly inhabited by Amorites, as that did not extend so far north. Well, we'll leave that for the scholars to dispute. I'm not too worried about it. We go now to Joshua 13, verse 5. And the land of the Gibeonite, I've already mentioned Gebal, that's on the coast right north of modern-day Beirut. The Greeks called it Byblos. And all of Lebanon toward the east, that's probably the Mount Lebanon range. Again, Asher never got that far. Israel never conquered that far. From Baal-Gad, now that's a famous place because I've been there. That is, if you go from where we were, Gebal, Aphek, drop down a little to the southeast on the anti-Lebanon range at the foot there, the southern end of that range is Mount Hermon, the famous Mount Hermon. And then if you go below that, I think it's about 25 miles or so, you get to Baal-Gad. Now, Baal-Gad in the New Testament is called Caesarea Philippi, which I'm sure you've heard of because Jesus went there with his disciples. Baal-Gad means Lord of Fortune or Troop of Baal. It's a Canaanite city in the valley of Lebanon at the foot of Hermon. It's called Baal Hermon. By the way, I looked up BiblePlaces.com. There's about 25 names for this place. It's amazing. And this is just one of them, Baal Gad. It was the most northern point to which Joshua's conquest extended, according to Easton's. It probably derived its name from the worship of Baal. Its modern representative is Benias. I've been there. Drivers took us there, and I'm glad because I still remember it. I looked up the pictures on the internet, and it brought back fond memories. It's a beautiful place. Springs, low trees, a lot of color. Unfortunately, it's got a bunch of caves full of pagan idols, which would offend any good Jew and any good Christian. But that's Baal Gad, below Mount Hermon. Like I say, I think it's about 25 miles or so down there, as far as Lebo Hamath. Now, Lebo Hamath is mentioned in other places in the scripture, so we'll check that place out. Hamath means fortress. Lebo means doorway, the doorway to the fortress, or a fortress doorway. According to Easton's, it's the capital of one of the kingdoms of Upper Syria of the same name. If you look at the Lebanon and Anti-Lebanon range, and in between there is Kole, Syria, the hollow of Syria, and you go north, you end up in Syria, and you end up at Hamath, which was a Syrian kingdom, but they're north of Lebanon. Well, if you go back south, down into the valley, the Anti-Lebanon and Lebanon Valley, Kole, Syria, you will be at the going toward the sources of the Orontes River in said valley, and right at the source of the Orontes Valley is Lebo Hamath. And so that was the doorway as you go north to get to Hamath, which was a prominent Syrian place on the Orontes River. And that's way north of what we're used to thinking of as Israel, because Israel never got there. We go now to verse 6, Joshua 13. All the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon as far as Mizrephath-Maim, all the Sidonians, I will drive them out before the sons of Israel. Only allot it to Israel for an inheritance, as I have commanded you. In other words, give them a legal title to it, even though that's an empty title until we conquer the place. Now, the hill country of Lebanon, that's the hill country of Lebanon, not of Judah. Oftentimes, the hill country in Judah is called the hill country, but here we're talking about Lebanon, those two ranges, Lebanon and Anti-Lebanon ranges. As far as Mizrephath-Maim means burning of waters, supposed to be salt pans or lime kilns or glass factories. Easton's puts it about 11 miles north of Acre, so we're still on the Lebanese coast there as we're coming down south. Drive them out, not only the Sidonians, the famous Sidonians. Sidon, of course, is south of current-day Beirut. It goes Gebal, also known as Byblos, down to Beirut. South of Beirut, we get to Sidon on the coast. All those people, all the inhabitants of the Lebanese hill country, on those, in between those and on the other, on the western edge of, in the valley and on the eastern edge of those two mountain ranges, God says, drive them out. They belong to Israel. Now, of course, this was on condition of obedience to God, that they would be driven out, and those conditions were not met. The Israelites were not obedient to God. Here's what John Gill says about that. It appears that not only the Sidonians, but many others, even the chief and most of those mentioned, were never possessed by the Israelites. Adam Clark says the Sidonians were never expelled by the Israelites and were only brought into a state of comparative subjection in the days of David and Solomon. They did get caught, but it was a long time after Joshua. Now, the fact that the Israelites didn't get these northernmost Lebanese places, Adam Clark has something to say about that. Quote, some have taken upon them to deny the authenticity of divine revelation relative to this business because, say they, God is stated to have absolutely promised that Joshua should conquer the whole land and put the Israelites in possession of it. This is a total mistake. God never absolutely, i.e. unconditionally, promised to put them in possession of this land. The promise of their possessing the whole was suspended on their fidelity to God. They were not faithful, and therefore God was not bound by his promise to give them any part of the land after their first act of national defection from his worship. Point number two, God never said that Joshua should conquer the whole land and give it to them. The promise was simply this, thou shalt bring them into the land, and thou shalt divide it among them, both of which he did, and procured them footing by his conquest, sufficient to have enabled them to establish themselves in it forever. In other words, God promised to take them in and to allot the land, but they were supposed to conquer it. He never promised that he was going to conquer it all before they got it. God never said that Joshua was going to conquer the whole land. Point number three, Clark says, it was never said, thou shalt conquer it all and then divide it. No, several of the tribes, after their quota was allotted them, were obliged to drive out the ancient inhabitants. as we shall see as we go through Joshua. Now, at the end of verse 6, God says, only allot it, the land, to Israel, only. What he means by that is, don't conquer it, only allot it. Just do one thing, divvy it up, but don't conquer it. Now, when he says allot it to Israel, this was done by lot. A lot is very similar to a lot, as Jameson Fawcett Brown says. Now, Jameson Fawcett Brown's got an interesting quote here. Quote, the method of distribution by lot was, in all respects, the best that could have been adopted, as it prevented all ground of discontent, as well as charges of arbitrary or partial conduct on the part of the leaders. In other words, a leader can't say, well, don't complain to me because you got a small piece of land. The lot, which is controlled by Yahweh, the lot gave you that small piece of land, so lay off of me. The lot's announcement in the life of Moses, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown continue, as the system according to which the allocations to each tribe should be made, was intended to lead the people to the acknowledgement of God as the proprietor of the land and as having the entire right to its disposal. That's because God is in charge of the lot. Moreover, a solemn appeal to the lot showed it to be the dictate not of human, but divine wisdom. It was used, however, only in determining the part of the country where a tribe was to be settled. The extent of the settlement was to be decided on a different principle. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown here quote Numbers 26:54, where Moses says, you got a big land, you get, if you got a big tribe, you get bigger land. If you got a small tribe, you get smaller land. So they had to work some stuff out. But basically, the lot was to say what, was to decide what area that the Israelites were going to be in, but then to draw more precise boundaries, they had to work that out amongst themselves. Jameson Fawcett Brown continued, the overruling control of God is conclusively proved because each tribe received the possession predicted by Jacob in Genesis 49 when he's giving his blessing on his deathbed to the patriarchs, and by Moses as he was about to die. He mentions where the people are going to end up, the tribes are going to end up. Now, that to me is interesting. We got prophecies by Jacob as he dies and Moses before he dies. Moses' prophecy only mentions a couple of geographical details, mentions some numerical prophecies, too, about who's going to be big and who's going to be strong. But the point is that the lot ended up matching what was prophesied by Jacob and Moses, which does show that God's in control of the lot. He made it match his prophecies. We go now to Joshua 13, verse 7. Yahweh continues speaking to Joshua. Now, therefore, apportion this land for an inheritance to the nine tribes of the half-tribe of Manasseh. Now, of course, he's still talking about the western side of the Jordan River. There was 9.5 tribes there and 2.5 tribes on the east. You add 9.5 and 2.5, you get 12. What are the nine tribes? Judah, Simeon, Benjamin, Dan, Ephraim, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, and Naphtali. Now, let's talk about these tribes a minute. Remember, there were 12 patriarchs, including Joseph, but Joseph is not counted in the 12. His two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are counted. That gives you 13 tribes. But we subtract one tribe, the tribe of Levi, because they weren't given a territorial inheritance. They were just given scattered cities. And so that gets us back down to 12. We go now to Joshua 13, 8 through 14. Now, we go to the eastern side of the Jordan River. With the other half-tribe, that's the other half-tribe of Manasseh, the Reubenites and the Gadites received their inheritance which Moses gave them beyond the Jordan to the east, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave to them. The reason it mentions Moses here is because Moses is who conquered all those people over there, the Amorites, Og of Bashan and Sion of Heshbon. And now there's going to be a lot of place names. Now, let me say what I've decided to do about this. I can't go over every place name because it would drive me crazy and drive you crazy, and you would turn off the audio, turn off the podcast. So I'm going to mention prominent cities. I read one commentator. He says, oh, there's a bunch of hard names in here. He's a Bible scholar, said they were hard. And they're certainly hard for me, and I know they're going to be hard for you. But we'll do the best we can. So now we're starting with the Reubenites. Now, in general, the Reubenites had the old territory of Moab. This is who the Reubenites were, what they were supposed to get from Aroer, which is on, well, they actually did get it, from Aroer, which is on the edge of the Valley of the Arnon. Now, remember, Moab ran from the Zered Brook, which runs into the Dead Sea on the south tip, going from east to west. That's the southern border of Moab. You go all the way up to the Arnon River, which runs into the Dead Sea about halfway up, going from south to north. Now, that Arnon River is a prominent boundary. Aror is a couple of miles on the, well, it's right there on the river to the north, on the edge of the valley. And running up from there, we have a bunch of places mentioned, the Plain of Medeba, Deban, I know where all these places are, Heshbon. Heshbon is the one we need to remember. That's at the northern tip of the Dead Sea, going east a little bit. That's the northern border. So those are our two prominent landmarks there. The in verse 9, the city which is in the middle of the valley is obscure. Most commentators think it is Ar, which is a city probably to the south of the Arnon River. BibleAtlas.org has a question mark there. Now what Joshua is doing here, or what the author of Joshua is doing here from verses 8 through 14, is giving a general description of the eastern Transjordan area, which encompasses 2.5 tribes. So we're at the southern end of it, the southern end of Transjordan, southern end more particularly of the tribe of Reuben. Now, Deban is a little bit left to our east. I'm sorry, not left, but west of Aror. Plains of Medeba, you go a little bit north of there. Right south of Heshbon is Medeba, and you get to the Heshbon on the north tip of the northern tip of the Dead Sea. All the cities of Sihon, king of the Amorites, Sihon had conquered them before the Israelites conquered him, the Amorites who ruled in Heshbon, as far as the border of the sons of Ammon. And so Heshbon is going a line, an imaginary line between the tip of the northern tip of the Dead Sea through Heshbon. That'll be the border of the sons of Ammon. And that is the border after the Amorites robbed them of the southern half of Ammon, which used to go from Heshbon down to the Arnon River. All right, so that's the southern border of this broad territory of Transjordan, of the Transjordan. And now verse 11 mentions Gilead. That's the eastern side of the Jordan River, going all the way from the Dead Sea to the Sea of Galilee, easy to picture. Mentions the territory of the Geshurites and the Maacathites. They're at the northeast of the Sea of Galilee. The Maacathites are close to the Geshurites, all of Mount Hermon. That's going even further north till you get to the famous Mount Hermon. And all Bashan, and of course that was called Bashan, that used to be run by Og, the Amorite king, before he got wiped out by Moses. And so now we're at the north, and Joshua mentions Og of Bashan, who reigned in Ashtaroth. That's just right east of the Sea of Galilee. Edrei, a little bit southeast on the Yarmouk River. That's where Moses clobbered Og of Bashan. The ruins, archaeological ruins of Edrei are still there. But the sons of Israel did not dispossess the Geshurites or the Maacathites, for Geshur and Maacath live among Israel until this day. Well, we know they didn't conquer all the way up there north to Mount Hermon. They were allotted it, but they didn't conquer it. And verse 14 says, only to the tribe of Levi he did not give an inheritance, not a tribal inheritance. They only got cities with pasture lands around them. And also they got offerings by fire to the Lord, that mainly the peace offerings. The God of Israel, their inheritance, as he spoke to them. And we talked all about that in the book of Leviticus. All right, so that's just a general description of the eastern side of the Jordan River. Now we're going to get more precise and look at the 2.5 tribes. In verses 15 through 23, we're going to look at the allotment to the sons of Reuben. Verse 15, so Moses gave an inheritance to the tribe of the sons of Reuben according to their families. Their territory was from Aror. All right, so now you go down to the Arnon River. Aror is right to the north of Arnon River. And down there, it's mentioned the city which is in the middle of the valley. That's probably Ar. Some people say, Gil says it's the same as Aror, but we're going to take it as Ar. It's Cambridge Commentary and BibleAtlas.org does. Although BibleAtlas.org has a question mark by it. Has Ar on the south side of the Arnon, Aror on the north side. That's Aror. Heck, I can't pronounce it. It's A-R-O-E-R. That's the one they know where it is on the north side. Some people say that this city in the middle of the river that I mentioned earlier is a little bit obscure. Some people, Benson, the commentator Benson, says it's an unknown city in the midst of the two separate streams of the Arnon. In other words, the Arnon takes a branch and then there's a city in the middle. It doesn't matter. We're on the southern edge of Reuben now, and then we go all up to Heshbon, that famous city in the northern part of the Moab Plain there, right to the east of the famous Mount Pisgah where Moses died. All right, and some other cities of mention, Jahaz, Kedemoth, Mephath, Kiriatham, Sibmah, all these cities are right there on the map. You can see as you're going from the Arnon River up to Heshbon. Beth Peor and the slopes of Pisgah, you might remember that when we were talking about Moses in Deuteronomy, giving his speeches and so forth. Beth Peor was a famous mountain where the Moabites worshipped, and maybe the Midianites too, worshipped Baal. Beth Jeshimos is right there on the northeastern border coast side of the Dead Sea, and so forth. And then Moses mentions the places, Heshbon, mentions Sihon, king of the Amorites who lived in Heshbon, and all the associated kings that allied themselves with Sihon, the chiefs of Midian who allied themselves with the Moabites and seduced them into idolatry. All of this we covered in Numbers. I'm not going to mention these five names of these princes of Sihon. They're not relevant. They're not interesting. And then Joshua mentions the famous Balaam, of course, who came down with a talking donkey, the donkey that fell over and pinned him to the ground, whom Balak tried to get to prophesy against Israel. So this is a little rehash of Israelite history. Now, the border of the sons of Reuben was the Jordan. That's the western border. We've gone from south, Arnon River, to Heshbon. Go a little bit further north, and then east, bam, you run into the Jordan River. So there's a little piece of the Jordan River that's their western border. All right, so that's so much for Reuben. Now, let's go to Gad. Joshua 13, verses 24 through 28. Moses also gave an inheritance to the tribe of Gad, to the sons of Gad, according to their families. Now, some cities are mentioned here, Jazer and all the cities of Gilead. Now, remember, Gilead is to the east side of the Jordan River, and we're already up there now. The southern border of Gad is roughly running through Heshbon, a line that runs through Heshbon to the Jordan River. And so now, Moses mentions cities around there, Jazer and the cities of Gilead. And then the text mentions here half the land of the sons of Ammon. Well, that means half the land which formerly belonged to the Ammonites, not half the land that was currently the Ammonites. It was half the land which formerly belonged to the Ammonites, as Benson said. That's before the Amorites took it away. Now, what was that half of the land? We can jump ahead to Judges 11:13 and see what the whole land of the Ammonites was and what the half of the land of the Ammonites was. Judges 11:13, the king of the Ammonites said to Jephthah's messengers, Jephthah was a judge, when Israel came from Egypt, they seized my land from the Arnon to the Jabbok and the Jordan. Now restore it peacefully. Well, we're going from Heshbon, not the Arnon, but from the city of Heshbon to the Arnon. That's where the Ammonites are now, and that's what Israel gets allotted if they could conquer it. But the Amorites had wiped out Ammon from the Arnon to Heshbon, and of course the Israelites then wiped out the Amorites. And so the king of the Ammonites is pointing out to his former land. And the maps are very confusing because of this, because it depends on what time you're looking at. Sometimes the Ammonites basically went all the way from the Arnon to the Jabbok, very easy to see, and Moab is south of the Arnon down to the Brook Zered. That's the easy. But unfortunately, the Amorites get in there and mess things up. The Israelites get in there and mess things up. But anyway, this half the land of the sons of Ammon, that goes from Heshbon to the Jabbok. As far as Arar, which is before Rabbah, that's a different Arar. The Rabbah there is Rabbath Ammon, the present-day Ammon, the capital of Jordan, big city there now. It was the major city of the Ammonites. If you look at the Jabbok River and go to the east and go just a little bit up to the northeast, that's where Rabbah is, or Rabbath Ammon, big famous city. You should know that one. And then Joshua goes on and says, as far as from Heshbon, then he mentions some other names, and I'm not going to mention them because we will get lost in the forest. And he says the rest of the kingdom of Sihon, of course Sihon had conquered all this before the Israelites got it. With the Jordan as a border, that's on the west, the western border. Now, I've got the southern border from Heshbon, the southern border of Gad, from Heshbon all the way up to the Jabbok River. I would tell you the Jabbok River was the northern boundary, but it's not that simple. And then we have the Jordan on the west. It makes a nice little square, and that would be easy. But now we have an interesting phrase here in verse 27. As far as the lower end of the Sea of Chinnereth, that's the Sea of Galilee, beyond the Jordan to the east. So the boundary of Gad went all the way to the southern end of the Sea of Galilee. Well, that sounds like it's an even bigger rectangle. But then things get even more complicated because we go down to verse 30, and it says, Manasseh comes down all the way to Mahanaim, which is on the Jabbok River. And as a result of those two verses, the maps contradict each other because people read it differently. All right, I'm going to get into those maps in just a minute, but before I do, let me point out that the Israelites had no right to conquer the Ammonites. Deuteronomy 2:19, when you get close to the Ammonites, don't show any hostility to them or fight with them, for I will not give you any of the Ammonites' land as possession. I have given it as possession to the descendants of Lot. Now, that raises what sounds like a problem here. If they're not allowed to attack Ammon, how are they allowed to inherit their territory? I assume it's because the Amorites had conquered Ammon, Sion of Heshbon, and since Sion, the Amorite of Heshbon, had been conquered by the Israelites, that's how they got it. All right, let's talk about the northern boundary of Gad. That's extremely fuzzy to me. I've got three maps, and every one of them has the northern border differently from the other one. One has the northern border. The Jabbok makes a nice little square. That would be Gad. But then how do you account for the verse we just read, verse 28? The northern border of Gad goes all the way to the lower end of the Sea of Galilee. How do you explain that? Well, so I have another map. It has a strip of territory going from the Jabbok River, the left end, the western end of the Jabbok River, all the way to the Sea of Galilee. One little antenna, if you will. But then there's another antenna going to the right, to the east, to Ramoth-Gilead. Now, where that comes from, I don't know. And then I've got another, that's the second map, a square with two rabbit ears. And now I have a third map, which has only one strip only, going up from the Jabbok River, slanting to the tip of the Sea of Galilee, leaving a diagonal there, and Manasseh has everything to the right of the diagonal. Now let's drop down to verse 30, talking about Manasseh. It says their territory was far from Mahanaim. Now if you look at the map, Atlas, BibleAtlas.org, Mahanaim is at the western end of the Jabbok River. And so if we go from Mahanaim, as Joshua 28 says the border should go from Mahanaim, verse 26, I'm sorry, goes from Mahanaim all the way up to the Sea of Galilee. Well, that will make a nice little antenna up to the Sea of Galilee. But if you have Mahanaim on the eastern end of the Jabbok River, and I've got a map that does that, and then if you go up to the Sea of Galilee, you just got instead of a little skinny antenna, you've got sort of a wider piece of land there going up to the tip of the Sea of Galilee. You get rid of the two prongs. And I still don't know where the eastern prong up to Ramoth-Gilead comes from. So I say all that to say I don't think anybody has the foggiest notion of what the northern boundary of Gad looks like. I certainly don't. All right, that's so much for Gad. Gad means fortune, by the way. We go now to Joshua 13, verses 29 through 33, and we will finish this difficult chapter. We'll talk about the half-tribe of Manasseh. The other half, of course, is on the western side. Verse 29, Moses also gave an inheritance to the half-tribe of Manasseh, and it was for the half-tribe of the sons of Manasseh according to their families. Their territory was from Mahanaim again. There's Mahanaim on the eastern end of the Jabbok River. That's where Jacob parted from Laban when Laban was chasing Jacob, if you remember that story in Genesis, as he was fleeing back from Haran with his wife, new wife Rachel. So it's sort of a famous city because of that. It's near Peniel, where Jacob wrestled with the angel of the Lord and all that. If that's where it was, then the territory of Manasseh dropped all the way down from its northern border near Gesher, north of the Sea of Galilee, all the way down there, making a slanted tip point, kind of. All Bashan, all the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, all the towns of Jair, which are in Bashan, 60 cities, half of Gilead, that means I'm sure the northern half, I think it means the northern half of Gilead, the southern half of Gilead being occupied by Gad. Ashtaroth and Edrei, the two famous cities of Og of Bashan. Edrei is where he got beat by Moses. I've talked about that many times before. Da-da-da-da-da-da. We're going to skip all this. We get down to verse 33, but to the tribe of Levi, Moses did not give an inheritance. Why? Because they got cities scattered through the land along with the associated pasture lands of those cities. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, the sigh of relief. I am finished with all the geography in chapter 13. But we're not finished with geography because we got 15 more verses in Joshua 14, which we'll tackle next. That's the inheritance west of the Jordan, the other 9.5 tribes. We'll take that up next time. Hope to see you then. Hope you enjoyed this audio.